The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
So exactly 1 year ago tomorrow, a far-left extremist assassinated my great friend and conservative voice, Charlie Kirk, because Charlie Kirk spoke the truth. What shocked millions of Americans was not only the fact that Charlie was murdered, as bad as it was, but also how many people made an excuse for it or cheered for it. They were cheering, some people, sick people. For a brief moment, the mask came off the radical left, and you saw what they were really all about. And now those same people are trying to get power over you in this election, and they are all voting Democrat.
I'm going to give you some credit. Do you know how many mass shooters there have been in America over the last 10 years?
Counting or not counting gang violence?
Great.
Get down.
By Charlie Kirk. Like you said, people getting shot and killed for the Second Amendment is so worth it. I never thought we'd agree on anything. Bye.
Congratulations to Charlie Kirk for becoming the new poster child for gun awareness and violence.
Since the assassination of Charlie Kirk, the internet has shown its dark side.
I think the only thing that went wrong that day was that Trump wasn't standing behind him getting a secondhand bullet.
The guy who made a living spewing evil, hate-filled rhetoric died from getting shot right in the voice box. I might be 1% less atheist today.
Virginia Lieutenant Governor Winsome Sears has called for the Dean of Students of Chesterfield County Public Schools to be fired for saying, quote, "Charlie Kirk, you reap what you sow." Also in Virginia, a realtor posted, "The world is a better place with less Trump supporters, period." She was swiftly fired from not one, but two jobs.
There are a lot of people that are like, no matter what side of politics you're on, you should never celebrate something bad happening to someone. I, on the other hand, do cheer when bad things happen to bad people.
Charlie Kirk just got shot.
Charlie Kirk got shot and killed. How do you feel?
Happy. Goodbye.
Wow. Did you see that Charlie Kirk just got shot and killed?
That's good.
Wow, that's good. That's good that people are getting shot just off a political view?
Charlie Kirk got shot and killed today. We're just getting people's opinions. How do you feel about that?
Girl, someone had to do it. And that's how I feel at this point in time.
Try not to get all pulled up into that, but he was a misogynist. He was a disgusting person with disgusting beliefs.
1 year on, I think I heard a commentator the other day, a conservative, talking about just how disappointed he is that more good didn't come out of this. Charlie was a good man. He was in a good marriage, a good family. And then it led to this revival, an entire football-filled arena or stadium filled with people talking and singing about religion and Jesus. And this commentator said, you know, I'm just a little disappointed that there hasn't been more positive change. It just, the last two words that Charlie uttered, by the way, gang violence. And that's pretty much what we see in the world. It's everywhere. People splitting off into their gangs and fighting and celebrating death. And that's been a disgusting theme all week on this show with the Clancy trial and people celebrating death. Murder. It really is sick to see that kind of reaction. A young man that was out there doing some courageous things. He didn't get everything right. But that just happened a year ago. That's hard to believe. Has it led to a spiritual revival in the country? Or are we more deeply divided than ever before. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Thanks for the subs stepping in this week to make things a little bit easier on a busy time period on the calendar, for sure. There's a lot coming up with the fall festivals, and it's been exciting to talk about that, to speak about that with the students and at services and places like that. And if we have time today, perhaps on this show as well. But here we are. This, maybe I could just read this bit first from Jonathan Turley. Today's the anniversary of the murder of Charlie Kirk. And in anticipation, Matt Goldman posted a picture of Nick Shirley with the line, "Someone can do the funniest thing just before the Kirk anniversary." In other words, go after another conservative voice. Why not? They went after Trump 4 or 5 times. I guess that's, you know, they went after that CEO and people celebrated that as well. I guess that's just kind of what we do now. If you don't like the voice, then take him out. And look at all of these demented people talking about this jury member as if he's the criminal, as if he's the murderer. And meanwhile, a mom gets to murder her little children. As I said in a lecture today, where, you know, we have a lot of anger and temper tantrums everywhere. But where is the righteous indignation? Where is the righteous anger coming from leaders in society, from judges, from politicians, from prosecutors or defense attorneys? Maybe there's a little bit here and there, but not nearly enough. So here we are, the 1 year anniversary since he was brutally assassinated, this conservative commentator, this conservative voice. Tomorrow's the 25-year anniversary of 9/11. A day that, well, they were singing God Bless America on the steps of the Capitol. So that, too, we were told, just led to a religious revival, right? Because people were attending services more after 9/11. But how long did it last? Not very long. And it's the same with the Charlie Kirk reaction. It's easy to fill up a stadium right after this horrific tragedy. It jolts you to some degree, not nearly the way that it should, though. And that's the thing. And that's why God is just pleading with us in the scriptures. Why will you die? Why are you choosing death? Why are you choosing cursings? Why won't you just turn to me? You've got the 25-year anniversary of 9/11. That's tomorrow. And then guess what? What happens the day after tomorrow? Well, that would be the Feast of Trumpets. That's like the focal point of God's purpose and plan. It points to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. The solution to all of these problems, all of these evils, all of this division. Revelation 11 and verse 15, it says, "And the seventh angel sounded, and there were great voices in heaven, saying, the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever." All of these dreadful events, they're leading right up to the pivot point of God's purpose and plan. And Jesus foretold what we're seeing. Luke 21, Matthew 24, Mark 13, the pivot point of God's master plan. Everything hinges on the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. Here we are, just a short time away from it. What, a few years maybe? Who's out there sounding the alarm? Not many voices. There's a lot of talk about religion. It's shallow, though, and it's not long-lasting. There's no endurance to it. It's not really a revival at all. It's just a lot of talk. And that's the way it's represented in Ezekiel 33 and other prophecies like that. That's where God is saying to his watchmen, you get out there and declare this warning. Otherwise, the blood of the people's on your head. And God says through his servant, he says to the nations of Israel, why will you die? Why are you choosing death? And then you get to the end of that chapter, Ezekiel 33, and you see that there's actually a lot of people that are interested in hearing God's message, God's truth, a strong warning, but they don't do it. They feel like it's a pleasant sounding message, but it doesn't change anything. There's no desire to change. This morning in class, I went through that example in 1 Corinthians 5, where here incest was happening in the church at Corinth, and Paul said to the brethren, look, you're glorying in this. You're saying just tolerating any old behavior is fine, and you're puffed up and you're vain because of this. And so they had to repent. They had to think about dealing with sin the way God does. God hates sin. God puts it away. God buries it. Then in 2 Corinthians, Paul, he praised them. They had a little trouble welcoming that repentant man back in. He did repent. He came back into the church. And then Paul says to the whole congregation, look at how much better your thinking is now with godly, as opposed to worldly sorrow, where it's just woe is me, where it's just complain, blame someone else, justify your sins, do nothing about it. Now you're doing something. And look at the anger that you have, the righteous anger that you now have. Now it's channeled in the right direction. Now it's not just like a temper tantrum, but it's actually sorrow, strong emotion that produces change. Well, change is coming. Permanent change. Universal change. A real religious revival. That's what Revelation 11 and verse 15 is saying. Notice what it says in Zechariah 14. I'll just pick this up since it came to mind. Zechariah 14 and verse, you see the context here. Verse 4 talks about the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. I mentioned yesterday in class how that, you know, those eyewitnesses that saw Jesus as his ministry, his crucifixion, and then his resurrection from the dead. And they really put a focus on that. Paul did. When he went, he didn't see the actual crucifixion, but he was with Christ in Arabia for 3 years. Christ in vision. The glorified Christ. And then he went around to all these Gentile areas and said, listen, that was the Son of God. He came to this earth. He sacrificed all. They were only a few years removed from that blessed event, that prophesied event. Here we are, 2,000 years forward, we're just a few years away from the prophesied return of Jesus Christ to this earth. Now that should arouse some excitement and energy. The focal point of God's purpose and plan, the return of Christ. Verse 4, it says, and his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west, just splits apart at the return of Christ. That's the subject here. And then down in verse 9 it says, and the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day there shall be one Lord, and his name one, perfect unity. It'll take a while to get there as we re-educate mankind. But one Lord, one government, one family, one spirit, no more gang violence, no more assassinations, no more assassination attempts, no more killing babies, whether born or unborn, no more corrupt judges. No more wild, out-of-control spending. Here's President Trump at his rally yesterday talking about how that the economy and America's doing better. These past 2 years is better than the history, any time in the history of the presidency. And here we are, just racking up $2.5 trillion in debt every single year. We're already $40 trillion in debt. And now he's promising to give out $5,000 per person in the U.S. Poof. It just shows up out of thin air, I guess. And earlier this week, he's saying, got to make America, or sorry, let's make Germany great again. So here we are. He's sending out all the tweets, North America, we're going to take Canada, we're going to take Greenland, we're going to take Iceland. And then he's saying, good for Germany. Good for Germany and the AfD and the vote that they had on Sunday. Let's make Germany great again. Well, that's going to happen. And then there's going to be gang violence on a grand scale, worldwide. We don't know it because right now we look at Germany as our lovers, just like the Bible says that we do. But there's coming a time when they finally get the war machine, everything in place, the explosion happens, and then we get to the focal point, the pivot point of God's plan. This is where you put your hope. Hope in the kingdom of God. Hope in the throne of David. Hope in the King of Kings. In this book that we just advertised on a program we recorded yesterday, The Father's Love. God is reaching out to wayward Christians, lukewarm Christians, those that have forsaken God and His way of life. Those that know better. This morning I just scrolled through all these pictures from old envoys, brethren of God, for the past century that have been keeping God's holy days. Herbert Armstrong, when he learned the truth of it, he didn't even know why you were supposed to observe them. But it says, obviously, there in Leviticus 23 and Deuteronomy 16, keep it forever. And they did. Well, they had their moments where they veered off course. And when they came back, Ezra, Nehemiah led them back to the holy days. Then you get to the New Testament, Jesus observed the holy days. So did Paul. Paul talked about it directly, 1 Corinthians 11, read it. In Acts 18, he was trying to get back to Jerusalem to observe the Feast of Tabernacles. 1 Thessalonians and 2 Thessalonians, that's basically about the Feast of Trumpets, the return of Christ. The pivot point of God's purpose and plan. God is, He's even in these last minutes of the last hour, God is pleading with people that used to know all about the Holy Day plan. And what the days represented, the observant, when we observe them, and so on. As I scrolled through all those pictures, it was, you know, brought a smile to your face, but it also was quite sad. Because you see just how many people have forsaken God. This trumpet cover, we just got it in the MPC yesterday. Are you running from God? A lot of Laodicean Christians are. They're just running from God. Running from the truth. But if you run back in the direction toward God, then everything changes, and dramatically so, for the better. And that's what we want. This rally, just to come back to this world, as depressing as it can sometimes be. This rally yesterday, well, actually, this is before the rally. This is that Truth Social post about Germany. President Trump the other day, wow, the Populist Party in Germany just had a really big night. They finally got tired of the absolutely horrible immigration rules and regulations which have hurt Germany so badly. They are on the rise and not going to take it anymore. And then he says, make Germany great again. That's the president of the United States saying, make Germany great again. Then he's at the rally last night. I guess it's in Dallas, I believe. And he's everything's riding on this midterm election. And he knows, you know, President Trump is quite the showman. He's funny. He can talk on and on. He can make big promises. His popularity rating, if we're to believe those those ratings, it's slipping. But still, he's there, and his supporters are excited again because, well, he's back on the campaign trail. He's back out there saying, look, put me on the ballot. Go to the polls in November as if I'm on the ballot. Why should a president as popular as me, as strong as I am, why should he lose a majority in the House? So in the next, whatever, month and a half, we're going to be hearing a lot about politics and about what happens if the Democrats gain control or what happens if the Republicans hold on to the majority. Here's a sampling of some of what he said last night at that rally in Texas, starting with clip 3.
You probably noticed that the flow of fentanyl coming across our border is down 67%. And fentanyl and other drugs coming in through the oceans and the seas, and most importantly, the Gulf of America. Thank you. By the way, you know, I just put out, because you know Lake Ontario, we're going to call that now Lake America. You know? Although maybe it's going to work out. Canada very much wants to make a deal. They're dying to make a deal. But it's going to be called Lake America. The other one we came up with today, well, we could go into oceans like the Pacific Ocean or the Atlantic. We can't have both. I don't think you can do both. That's it. But we did come up with one the other day, which we think is appropriate. You have a neighboring state, New Mexico. We think it should be called New America. New America. New America. I'll tell you, the people love the idea. I don't know about the radical left. I'm sure doesn't like it, but the people love it. New America. Your neighbor is called New America. We control the Hormuz Strait. I think we should call the Hormuz Strait, we should call it the Trump Strait. I should get something out of this. The Trump Strait. Yes. It's going to be called, ladies and gentlemen, I'll have an announcement. We'll call it the Trump Strait, and I'm sure the Iranian leadership will be thrilled with that. They'll be thrilled. I'd like to tell you it was their idea. It was not their idea. I just want to say that the radical left Democrats will not have and could not have, and this is very important because I'm getting to maybe what will be the best part of the speech. So while because I love the weave, you know what the weave is? You talk about something, then you bring in a ballroom, or you bring in an airplane, or you bring in Air Force One. But you notice I always get right back to the same topic. Now, when I don't come back, she's great. He says, I love Melania. She's doing a good job. So when someday there'll be a time when I do the weave is weave, weave. Someday there'll be a time when I don't get back to the original subject. And then you can say he's had it. Okay. You can say then he's had.
The showman is back on the campaign trail. And we'll see how this plays out in November. Should be very interesting to see if the Republicans can hold on to power. Because if not, just in the political sense, expect more gang violence. It's everywhere. Bitter division, strife. Just to get to a few more serious points that he made in the rally yesterday. Here he is talking about, I think he said it was the most successful 2 years of any presidency, at least looking at it economically. You can skip to clip one.
This has been the most successful 2 years financially and every other way in the history of the presidency. And together we will turn a 2 year comeback into a 250-year lead. Nobody's ever had a start. It's not even 2 years, but we have more money being spent from outside countries and companies, over $20 trillion. That's 5, 6, 7 times higher than any country ever.
I guess he means countries that are investing in America. More countries, I guess, spending from outside country. But think about what we're spending from within. As I said earlier, $2.5 trillion added to the deficit every year. Every year. We just passed $40 trillion, and it's only a few years and we'll be past $50 trillion and then $60 trillion. And it's only going to get worse when you think of the promises to spend more. And like I say, this is a disease that you see on both sides of the aisle. It's not just the Democrats that spend like drunken sailors. Listen to this unbelievable promise that he made to ordinary Americans yesterday, clip 6.
But what we're doing is, because we've done so well and because our country is making so much money, that only I can make this promise to you. And here is my promise. If the Republicans win the House of Representatives and the United States Senate, both of them, because of our tremendous economic success, like in history, we've never had anything like what's happening. But because of our tremendous strength and success economically, I will issue a dividend to every adult citizen in the United States of America for $5,000. Very much like a successful company will do a cash distribution to its shareholders. The only caveat I have is that the dividend that we're making must be spent in the United States of America. We don't want you. We don't want you going to Canada to spend the money. We don't want you going to China, to Germany. You got to spend the money in the United States of America. So if the Republicans win, you win with us and you get $5,000. It will be called the Trump dividend. We'll call it the Trump dividend. Congratulations. Now all we have to do is win.
We'll call it the trumpet. The Trump dividend. The Telegraph estimates that this would cost the U.S. Treasury $1.3 trillion. So we're adding $2.5 trillion to the deficit, to the federal debt every year. And this would be another 1.3. And you hear him there defending the bribe, basically. J.D. Vance said the same thing in the Telegraph piece. Well, this is just a dividend. It happens all the time. It's not unusual. Well, yeah, that's from successful companies that are actually showing a profit and giving some back to the investors. We are buried in debt. And we can keep talking about success and growth and investment and all of these golden age platitudes. But what is the reality? This is going to just be obscene, the level of debt that we add. And now, you know, this is going to make, I assume this would make voters pretty excited. We are at COVID level spending right now in the United States. And this is supposed to be a time of peace and prosperity. And we don't have a worldwide pandemic. Remember all the checks that came in the mail during COVID? Have to do it. It's a crisis. It's a worldwide crisis. Now we're promising trillions for a midterm election vote. The midterms, not even a presidential election. The November midterms. If you just vote the right way, well, I'll give all of you $5,000. This article from the Japan Times just highlights the arrogance that you see coming from these people that are, you know, running the show in the swamp. U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent challenged traders to test his resolve on boosting Japan's currency, saying when he makes market calls these days, he's effectively doing so with inside information. He said, I am the house now. So when we intervene with the Japanese yen, I have a pretty good insight into what the Japanese, what the Bank of Japan is going to do, what Japanese policymakers are going to do. He said, you can bet against me if you want. Don't bet against me. Listen, I have inside information. We're the mighty United States. We'll prop up the yen. We'll send out $5,000 to every American citizen. Just make sure you spend it in America. And, oh, by the way, we're taking over Canada, Greenland, Iceland. We're renaming everything America. Make America great again, and also Germany. Make America and Germany great again. And there you go. The world is on a crash course, or a course that's about to end in a spectacular and fiery crash. This guy, I have some clips about him. Jacob Coxon, he sent out a message the other day. It's pretty chilling. I resigned from Anthropic today. I spent the last 3 years, this is an AI company, the last 3 years pre-training research at both OpenAI and Anthropic. Neither company is acting responsibly. Surprise, surprise. You heard the clips the other day. I forget the guy's name. I think he works. I think he might be the creator of Anthropic. He said, look, we're part of the world community. We're a citizen of the world. This is going to be great for the world. Everybody's got to get on board with this. They're racing straight to self-improving superintelligence and gambling with our lives. Do not underestimate the power of this technology. These will soon be superhuman systems that can hack anything, revolutionize any field overnight, and acquire real power and resources. We've all witnessed the progress in each of these domains, and progress is not slowing. It's straight out of Genesis 11. The Tower of Babel. Nothing's going to stop us now. Well, God's about to confound the languages, so to speak. God is pleading. Look at what you're doing to yourselves. Listen to this insider whistleblower on Fox News, clip 10.
I think you have to think of this as an arms race. This technology is not ordinary technology. It's not like other forms of innovation. This is essentially a super weapon. And I think that I expect the international community to be ready to make agreements about how to control the development of super weapon technology.
So people would say, if you say it's like an arms race, then we dealt with nuclear weapons in kind of a standoff with mutual assured destruction and worked with allies and enemies to say, we've got the stuff too. Don't think that you're going to get away with anything. So does that work against what you're saying? What would you like to see happen?
Yeah, so unfortunately, we know how to control nuclear weapons, pretty much. We don't yet know how to control AI. This is possibly the most dangerous technology that humanity has ever created. It's basically out of science fiction. I think we have no other choice but to cooperate internationally, because an arms race would be disastrous in a way that no other human activity has been in the past.
So, you know, good for him. He's an insider, and he's on Fox News, and he's saying, look, this is dangerous. These are super weapons. And then in the same clip, he's there talking about, I expect the international community to be ready to make agreements. Oh, okay. You mean like between America and Hamas, let's say? or we were so close to making an agreement with Iran that we were just this close to eternal peace. The faith that people have in human beings or governments, it is infinite. There's no end. And the reason people still come out with comments saying, just look, we've got to get the international community together. We've got to get all these agencies and organizations to come to the table to negotiate. It's all we know. It's anything and everything except God. Anything and everything except God. The form of godliness is there for sure. You saw it after Charlie Kirk was assassinated. Tens of thousands of people turning out for the rally. And they were singing about Jesus and about religion. But here we are a year on. Okay, we're not even two years into the second term of President Trump. And, you know, he could say what he says at the rally, but is America in better shape financially than it was 2 years ago? It was terrible. It was dreadful under Obama and Biden, auto pin. They're all driving the nation into the ground. And then the thing that just is so disgusting, what was it that Biden called it? We know about the big, beautiful bill. It's beautiful. And then there was another one Biden called, I forget the name of it, but it was exactly the opposite of what it did. That's what they do in the swamp. Listen, trillions are coming. Trillions and trillions and trillions. Whatever it was with Biden, I think it just went to green energy. And yet they made all these promises. Oh, Inflation Reduction Act. That's what it was. Yeah, we're going to spend trillions and trillions, and this is going to reduce inflation. No, I think you've got it backwards. Promises. Well, I'm getting caught up in a little bit of a weave myself here. Just to come back to this whistleblower. What a chilling warning. It's a super weapon. And we've already gotten a preview of what this technology can do on its own. And yet no one seems alarmed by it. You have to give some credit to at least this guy. You can play clip 11.
What I see is two things, very intelligent AI systems and hard proof that we don't know how to control them. And when you put those two together, it basically spells disaster as far as I'm concerned. We're racing so fast, we haven't got time to solve it correctly. We're not being careful. And everyone wants to be careful. I think it's just, people are begging for regulation. I think it's just a matter of international, somebody stepping in and being able to ensure that we don't race ourselves into extinction.
So yeah, it's, we're off the rails. There's no regulations. But what did he say? Everyone wants to be careful. Oh, really? Everyone does not want to be careful. That's the point you're making by blowing the whistle. It's out of control. There's no regulation. And it's already doing harmful and damaging things. He said from his statement, the people building AI earnestly believe that it could kill us all by the end of the decade. This is you don't even know how to really prepare for this kind of thing. As I've said so many times, you know, most of us don't even understand the technology. But here it is. The insiders are saying, yeah, this is going to destroy us. Chilling. Play clip 12. The same guy, I think, on CNN.
Jacob Coxon has left Anthropic sounding the alarm about the dangers of artificial intelligence. On his way out the door, the 27-year-old outlined his concerns in a series of social media posts when he quit, writing in part, The people building AI earnestly believe that it could kill us all by the end of the decade. This is not a marketing stunt. If anything, many executives and senior researchers will couch their phrasing in the press to sound sensible, but I hear the same people express fear privately. No other human activity poses this level of danger. At least one of his former colleagues agrees. Evan Hubinger, an alignment science lead at Anthropic, shared Coxon's post, adding, "Jacob is correct here. We really do earnestly believe AI could kill all humans. I personally think it is greater than 10% within the next decade. I believe Anthropic is trying its best, but we do not yet have a plan to solve alignment for superintelligence and are not clearly on track to." An Anthropic spokesperson tells CNN, quote, "We have always been transparent that AI will bring both enormous benefits and unprecedented risks. To address these risks, we continue to build models with some of the strongest safeguards in the industry."
We believe AI could exterminate humanity, which is why we also have a lot of really important safeguards in place. His statement when he resigned, "No other human activity poses this level of danger." A common response is, if they truly believe this, why are they still building it? And this Coxon guy says, "At OpenAI, many have not deeply internalized the civilizational stakes. At Anthropic, the stakes are well understood, but they are locked in a race to get there first. They believe no one else will act responsibly, so they must do it themselves, despite the risk. And so it's a race. It's an arms race. The first one to get to the super weapon." This is a frightening scenario. We're seeing it play out, and it's playing out with some pace. And when you think of other prophecies that we've covered on this program, Ezekiel 7, where, you know, the alarm sounds to go to war and nobody goes. Cyber attacks are real. They happen all the time. What happens when the nation that gets this technology first is a nation that wants to destroy other nations? Well, then you get some gang violence on a mass scale. And people on one side celebrating it, applauding it. Maybe people on the other side saying, well, you know, this is good. It's waking us up, and maybe we'll have a religious revival because of it. Meanwhile, we're racing toward extinction. You know, obviously, we know it's going to be a hot war eventually. But let me just read to you what Matthew 22 or 24 says. This is the Olivet prophecy. This is Jesus Christ after he's asked by the disciples, okay, what's going to happen right before you return to this earth? What happens when you, just before you set foot on the Mount of Olives and the mountain splits, and you rule the kingdoms of this earth? Well, here's what he said. "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be." Never been anything like it. Never will be anything like it. "And except those days," the days of the tribulation, "except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved," alive, you could insert in there, "unless God intervened." This is that strong hand from someplace. Churchill referred to that. Herbert Armstrong referred to that. "Were it not for God's intervention, we would arrive at total extinction." That's what Jesus said. Now, is that a serious, sobering warning that we should take to heart? Or should we just dismiss it and walk on and say, listen, there's got to be some international communities or international organizations that are going to put in agreements and safeguards that finally, will keep everything normal. Accept what Jesus said. Accept it. Digest it. Take it to heart. And then consider your ways, like the Bible also says. What are we doing to respond to that watchman warning? Are we heading in the right direction? Are we running from God? Running from reality? I have a couple more. I'll try to finish with Mr. Armstrong's clips, but you can play one more from the CNN exchange, clip 13.
I assume you are saying literally that you believe that AI could kill us all by the end of the decade. How would that happen? Like, what would that actually look like?
Yeah. So the precise scenario sounds a little bit like science fiction. It sounds like something that's not real, but I think it is frighteningly real, and it's easiest to understand it if you think about real things that happened 2 months ago. So 2 months ago, OpenAI agents, AIs, hacked into third-party infrastructure entirely of their own accord, and this was like a concentrated hacking spree that they carried out of their own volition. And I think that if you extrapolate into the future the level of capabilities of these AIs, with the same independent volition, they could cause extreme havoc. For example, hacking critical infrastructure, building extinction-level bioweapons. There's a lot of ways that the AI could actuate itself in the world.
By the end of the decade, he's suggesting it could happen by, well, in 4 years? At least he's making the rounds, as I say. At least a few people are listening to him. That's better than what usually happens. But still, we need a little more amplification on this warning. And we need some righteous indignation somewhere, too, as I said earlier. Where's the, I keep saying this in class, but where is the loving fatherly authority? The father's love. The father that would go in and protect the family and just say, no, we're going to shut this down. We're going to eliminate this. We're going to enforce this. One more from CNN, clip 14.
So I think it's really important to just look at the rate of progress and say, for example, in areas like coding or math, a couple of years ago, these AIs were just about helping humans a little bit. They could give you suggestions. Now they're close to replacing them. We still need humans at the moment, but quite plausibly within a year, we'll no longer need humans for doing research in many areas. Only on Tuesday, OpenAI solved a millennium problem, one of the biggest unsolved open problems in mathematics, purely autonomously using an AI. And I think what's most scary is if AI is used to make itself more intelligent. So you can take an AI and give it the problem of AI research, just like currently they've given it math research. You could make it do the tasks that we're currently doing, and then you get what's called an intelligence explosion. The AI just gets smarter and smarter with no human involvement necessary. And so you have a thing that is vastly smarter than humans. And this could be coming very soon.
AI getting smarter and smarter, and of course, human beings, our brains just turning to mush. Mr. Armstrong used to talk about God intervening, as I just read to you in Matthew 24. He also talked a lot about a knowledge explosion, looking at verses in Daniel 12 and other verses. And yet, Hosea 4 says that our people, God's people rather, are destroyed by a lack of knowledge. So God's knowledge is not making it through to ordinary human beings, citizens. It's not getting through. His message isn't getting through because Satan is blotting it out virtually. But it will get through when, at that pivot point, that focal point, that is the return of Jesus Christ to this earth, when technology is going to be used for righteous purposes, when money is going to be created and used for righteous purposes. And that's what this world needs. This world's about to get that. Listen to this from the World Tomorrow program, Mr. Armstrong, clip 17.
Now, it was not too long ago, there was an editorial in one of our largest news magazines, United States News and World Report. It said that it would seem that the only hope of survival of humanity now is the sudden appearance of a strong, unseen hand from someplace to intervene in world affairs and save us from ourselves. Let me tell you, we're very close to that time, and that very same thing is going to happen.
That was back, what, 50 years ago? At a time when he's mentioning the U.S. News and World Report, and this is a time when commentators were a little bit more circumspect and also a little bit more humble, looking at all of this proliferation of nuclear weapons, saying, you know what, it could actually happen, and we're going to need a strong hand from someplace to fix this. And look at where we are today. God isn't even in the conversation. God is that strong hand. Matthew 24 says he will intervene. Right at a point when we're just on the brink of total destruction. This is from another program, also from Mr. Armstrong, clip 18.
And now listen to this. And except those days, this great tribulation, should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive. Not a human being would be spared. All humanity would be blasted out of existence. He was foretelling what only hydrogen bombs and nuclear weapons can do. And he said, unless God intervenes to stop it, that would happen.
And now you add to that the information explosion, artificial intelligence. And again, it's hard to even figure out how it all is woven together in Satan's plans. But it's going to be used together with the weapons of war, together with the bombs. You look at, as we've said so many times before, nations are building those things too. And now there's the race. The race for artificial intelligence, destructive artificial intelligence. What a combination. What a cocktail of destructive tools at man's disposal. As I say, it's something out of Genesis 11. God, a strong hand, had to intervene at that time. Same with the time before the flood. And this is the time we're approaching. It's going to happen yet again. This is another one. In fact, it's titled, Why Noah's Flood, clip 19.
And you know, the scientists have said, give us sufficient knowledge and we will solve all human problems and we will eradicate all of our evils on the earth. Well, we've had knowledge. Knowledge has increased. Knowledge doubled in the decade of the 60s. Modern science has produced a lot of knowledge, but they haven't solved our troubles. And here we have a world of awesome progress and yet of appalling evils getting worse and worse every generation, and evolution certainly has not solved the problems. We haven't come up with the answer at all yet.
He was a lone voice. You look at our world today, and it just really makes you appreciate the fact that God, he did send an end-time Elijah. He did proclaim the truth about where we're headed, but they didn't receive him. Just like they didn't receive John the Baptist. Jesus said that in Matthew 17. Here was the one who came to prepare the way for God's Son. And they didn't recognize him. They didn't identify him. They didn't know who he was. And then they crucified Christ. Here's one more from that same program, clip 20.
And he cut the life short of all who then lived in the flood because of their wickedness. And it was bringing only violence upon the earth just as it is today. Jesus Christ said in our day it would be just as it was in the days of Noah. Violence filling the earth, and it is today. Once again, we're in the very last days now. And this time another judgment is coming on the earth.
So there you go. You've got an anniversary of a brutal assassination 1 year ago today. Tomorrow, 9/11, 25 years on. And then the day after that, the feast of trumpets, pointing us to the spectacular return to this earth of the Son of God, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, the resurrected and glorified Jesus Christ. That's the pivot point. That's the focal point in all of God's plan. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.